Doesn't matter where you are in the world, football eats its own language, right? You give someone a ball on a beach in Brazil, you give a kid at a local housing estate in the middle of London a ball, speaks the same language. Everyone can be a coach, right? Well, everyone thinks they can be a coach, great. You gotta lead, whether it's leading a bunch of 10-year-old kids or it's a bunch of blokes who've got jobs during the day to then turn up at nighttime. How do I get the best out of them? That's a question you ask yourself all the time. Leadership to me is getting everybody on the same page. It's a page that they help write. I wanna guide that conversation with my experience. Leadership is lacking a lot in football.
You've got a young player. This young player has been struggling to break into the squad, and they come to you as a coach to say, hey, Matthew, this is my goals. This is where I want to get to by the end of the year. How would you approach that?
I'm not just giving you my perspective right now. I'm giving you what I've done before.
Joel Benicio here. Welcome to the Discover You podcast. I am joined today with a very special guest in this very special episode. The man I'm about to introduce is about to make a huge leap of faith, jump in and take over the club that we love, Port Darwin. And I'm joined today with the head coach of Port Darwin, Matthew. How you doing, Matthew?
Good, thanks, mate. Great to be here and great to represent Port Darwin for the first time in a public appearance. So really looking forward to it. Big 12 months coming up. And a big, I guess, 30 or 60 minutes with you tonight as well.
Perfect. This episode is all about being relaxed, and we're going to talk about your philosophy, your journey of football. We're going to talk about all the fun stories and how you even got here. I know one thing that I do know is you're from Melbourne. Tell us a little bit about whereabouts in Melbourne are you from?
From the northern suburbs, mate. So grew up in the northern suburbs as a kid.
Yep.
Bought my first house in the northern suburbs.
Oh, you got a house in there?
Yeah. So, and I love it. I love where I'm from. I think it doesn't matter where you come from.
Yeah.
It's loving where you're from, loving the people, the culture, the food, and the football. So, yeah, northern suburbs. Bit different up here.
It's different. So, you've obviously been in Darwin, I believe, 2 years. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What led you to come to Darwin?
Yeah, I asked myself that a few times, and I had to explain. I had to explain to friends and family. Opportunity, and I've realized since I've been here that Darwin is a place of opportunity. I was one of the ones who took a random leap of faith and said, yeah, there's a job in Darwin. Yeah, why not? Let's give it a go. And since then, I've realized how much opportunity there is here, whether it's football, socially, or work. There is so much opportunity. And what a place. I've really enjoyed my time so far. And with football coming into it now and joining Port Darwin, I think the next 12 months can be really cool too.
Yeah. So when you got announced on the Port Darwin Facebook page, an Instagram page, I'm part of so many different circles, and I was hearing people talking. They're like, who is this new coach, man? We want to understand his philosophy of football. He's coming in from down south. He's got some licenses that many of the Darwin's coaches may not have, and he's coming in with completely new mindset. He's watched the football down south. He's watched the football in Melbourne. He knows what we can do right here in Darwin to elevate the level. And I guess, before you even go into all the achievements and everything you've done in football, I want to understand, and the people want to understand, how did you fall in love with football? Where did it all start?
I think like everybody, you grow up with football because of family a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I think I got into football because of my dad, who loved football. And then he played football, so I'd tag along and join in. And I remember training with men from the time I was 8 years old. And that made me very resilient, because you train with men, you learn very, very quickly. When you make a mistake, you learn what works, what doesn't work, that trial and error stuff. So I was fortunate to do that. My dad was still playing. And that's what really started my love of football. And I think something that kids don't have these days is accessibility to football on TV and things like that. So, watching the Premier League all the time was so easy to watch, and you couldn't watch like it is now. You can pick which game you want to watch. It was like, this is the game on tonight on SBS. And, Liverpool used to play all the time at 9:30, so I'd watch them all the time. And, Steven Gerrard and all these sort of players. So I grew up in that era of accessibility to football, parental support. I just fell in love, like billions of people around the world, with football.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Stevie G. May as well hit you with a question. Who's your favorite player?
My favorite player?
Yeah.
Do you want to be really honest?
100%. Be honest.
Lee Catamol. Do you know Lee Catamol is?
No, tell me about him.
Played for Sunderland.
Yeah.
And I hope when you put this piece together,
yep.
you throw some clips in of some of his finest tackles and finest aggressive moments. So he captained Sunderland for a while.
Yeah.
And just a never say die attitude. You know, it's a 30-70 challenge.
Yeah.
He'd try and win it. If he couldn't win it, you'd know that he at least tried. You'd be feeling it yourself. So somebody just has the passion like that.
Yeah.
He's my idol, man. So loved him. That was when I was a bit older. That was when I got a little bit older. When I was younger,
yeah.
I had this conversation last night with someone. My real idol when I was a kid was like Mike Viduka.
Why?
Big, strong striker.
Yeah.
Australian playing the Premier League, living my dream. You know, every kid wants to play in the Premier League, right?
Yeah.
Living the dream. Mark Viduka, strong, just get his body out. Big Croatian bloke. He was fantastic. So
they don't make strikers like that anymore, do they?
They don't. They don't. The strikers have changed. These agile little guys running around. But I'm a bit traditional. You might see that during the year. I'm a bit traditional. So give me a big 6'2" striker who's not scared to throw his arms up, or, you know, he better win every header.
He better. He better.
Yeah. So that's the sort of style I'm looking for. Big, strong striker.
Beautiful. So growing up in Melbourne, you play football all into it. What age?
I think 17, 18, probably 18, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you a story like a lot of people do. And maybe, you know what, I just think it's the younger generation that is anymore. It's really the older generation used to tell you that I could have been a professional, I could have done this. And, yeah, we all dreamed about it.
Yeah.
But that wasn't me. I think I realized at an age, probably 13, 14, that, you know what, I'm pretty good, but there's so many that are better than me. And that's the realization for me was that, yeah, I love this game, but I'm not a superb player.
Yeah.
And that's where I started to think about, well, what else is there in the game? You know, what else can I do? And I've done so many things in the game. The coaching, it's great. I really enjoy it. And I can't wait to get back this year. Like, I'm so excited to get back into it. It's taken me a couple of years up here in Darwin to find my feet, to really question myself if I want to get into the environment of coaching up here.
Yeah.
But I've taken the leap, so...
Yeah. What was the environment in coaching in Melbourne like?
Very competitive. So very, very competitive, A, to get a job, like to get a good job, because for me, you know, I don't want to coach just at any level. It's always good to push myself with good players and good environments. I think good environments are so hard to find. So, yeah. And that's not just from a cultural point of view. It's facilities and things like that. The last club that I was at in Melbourne, I was having this joke with someone very recently. We had four pitches, two synthetic, two top quality pitches. One, they play the women's A-League on. So, you know, it's like high quality, six change rooms, coach's room, boardroom, full bistro, all at your fingertips.
Yeah.
And up here, it's not like that. The facilities here are, I'm trying to think of the right word without being offensive, they've got so far to come. And I think it's a really important thing that the government invests some money into facilities up here for football and all sports, to be fair. I think it doesn't matter what sport you play. But our facilities here don't stack up to what's down south. And you talk about the impediments to growing. That's one of them for me. But Port Darwin obviously have some new facilities.
Yeah.
But it's only, you know, 20% of what it should be. In the bigger picture.
We need... No. Government, do something. So, obviously, you did a bit of coaching down south in Melbourne. Is that correct?
Yep.
And then what license you got under your belt?
So, done B license. So, yeah. B license coach, which, you know, down south is quite standard, I think. In my friendship group, it is. So, in my friendship group, a B license is your sort of, you know, run of the mill, good NPL, sort of junior coach, even NPL sort of senior coach around that sort of B license level. So, and I did my B license a long time ago. I think it was 2014.
Yeah.
So I was one of the first ones to start that process in that advanced coaching journey.
Yeah.
But I'm at a point now where I don't know if I want to go any further in my coaching journey. I'm not sure what I want to do. And that's why I'm coming back to coach and say, well, you know what? I'll put my feet back in the water.
Just see what's happening.
I had 2 years off. Do I want this or not?
Yeah.
And since I actually signed at Port Darwin, so forget the conversations beforehand where I was asking myself a million questions. Do I really want this? Like, I don't want to throw myself back in the stress of coaching because it's stressful. It's very stressful.
Many people looking at a coach don't think so. They think, oh, just you could have just played the play and we could have won the game. They don't know the decision that goes ahead, the stress that goes ahead before making a decision.
There's so many decisions to make.
Yeah.
And that's something that we spoke about the other day when I first caught up with you and first sort of met you.
Yeah.
I went away and thought about, you know, who am I? Like, what am I as a person? What am I as a coach? And like analytical, data driven, but a risk taker. But it's educated risk. So you take all that data and subconsciously you're taking educated risk in everything you do. And I can't lie to you.
Yeah.
Going to Port Darwin's an educated risk. It's a risk. It's the unknown for me. Anything unknown is risky, right? So but look at the upside. You know, what's the upside? What's the downside? There's so much upside.
Which is?
We can take this club places.
Yeah.
And that's my plan. So don't say too much, but, you know.
No, there's a future.
I ain't here to lose.
Okay. You're going to start with that as a statement. You're not here to lose.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your mindset, right? You're not here to lose. Where did you get that mindset from?
Wow. Where did I get the mindset from? You know what? You know what I reckon it is? Growing up, I supported Sunderland, still support Sunderland. So you watch a small team playing the Premier League and they play the Man Cities and the Manchester Uniteds of the world.
Yeah.
And you're watching a bunch of blokes battle for 90 minutes and know that they're not as good as the bloke next to them. Know that the team they're playing against, they're facing Cristiano Ronaldo's, the Michael Owens of the world. These guys aren't as good, but they're going to battle all day. They're going to defend and defend all day. To be honest, 90 minutes, parking the bus, structure. So that mindset that I come from comes from growing up with that, from seeing that team battle all day and try and pinch a goal. Like, I grew up in that sort of mentality of you just got to work hard. And I'm going to bring that to Port Darwin. I'm going to be a hardworking team.
So how's that going to translate in terms of the way you coach the boys?
I think that when I met the players last night,
yeah,
I probably gave the impression that, you know, I said to you before, not here to lose.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty strict, that I'm demanding. Yeah. That's the thing for me. So to me, it's not strictness. To me, it's the expectation.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work with the players to set that expectation. So it's not just me who dictates that.
Yeah.
I might lead them towards that, but I want the players to dictate that to each other, to set the standard in training. You know, you're doing sprints and someone doesn't make the line. You know, that little bit of cheating, I don't like that. But I want the players. I can see your face now. You're like, oh, shit, that's me. I'm that player that.
Jalugo.
But I'm, you know, that little bit of stuff.
Yeah.
That's the mentality that's stuff, the mentality, right? That's the dedication. You can call it strict. You can call it whatever you want. But you're only cheating yourself, that sort of saying.
That's true.
And I want players to police that. You don't make that line. I want the bloke next to you to tell you. And I don't want you to be offended by that. He's holding you to a standard.
Yeah.
He's not having to go at you. Yeah. He's holding you to a standard. And that's the mentality. That's the mindset.
Yeah.
We do everything at our best. Okay? And that's what I want to see.
Let's talk about a topic that I know is quite close to you, leadership.
Mm.
What does leadership mean to you?
Wow. I've been on a leadership journey the last couple of years. My first foray into leadership was really football.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing with football and coaching. Everyone can be a coach, right? You said before, everyone thinks they can be a coach. Great.
Yeah.
You got to lead, whether it's leading a bunch of 10-year-old kids. Some people want to coach 10-year-old kids, or it's a bunch of blokes who've got jobs during the day who, you know, work their butt off during the day in some of the heat we have here and the conditions we have here to then turn up at nighttime. How do I get the best out of them? Yeah. That's a question you ask yourself all the time. Same in the workplace. How do I lead? What do I do with my team? Do I, you know, sometimes you sit there and you sort of analyze every conversation you have.
Yeah.
But you get to a point where you start to become more and more confident in your leadership. And that's really, really important. Leadership to me is getting everybody on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
It's a page that they help write.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not something that I say, here's where we're going. It's the, where do you think we can go? I want to guide that conversation with my experience.
Mm-hmm.
But I want the players that really have that input. Leadership is lacking a lot in football. I'm not going to lie.
What makes you say that?
I think that on the park, you know, we've changed the way we play.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm going back to my Lee Cadamal days.
Yeah.
Where leaders, you know, are in there crunching tackles. Roy Keane, the Roy Keanes of the world.
Ah, Roy Keane.
We've lost that. You know, there's different ways of leading, right?
Yeah.
There's the verbal stuff and there's those people who do. And I think we've lost some of those doers.
Yeah.
I think that's so, you know, if any players out there want to come play for Port Darwin and you're a doer, you know, hit me up because they're the sort of players I like to see.
Recruiting
while we're here. But leadership, it's really crucial to every club. We've got a great leader in James, our president, who leads and structures the club fantastically. But I want leaders on the pitch. I want leaders off the pitch.
Yeah.
You don't have to be experienced to be a leader. I want to see emerging leaders too. Yeah, there's young players who show that potential, not just as footballers, but as people. And that's where football can connect some of those leaders. They can get their first taste of leadership. They might wear a captain's armband at under 14s for the first time. And they get that little bit of feeling of, cool, these guys are looking after me. I'm responsible for this crew. Because creating leaders in our community is really important too. So leadership is a very big thing.
So it's the things that the players are learning from football and from yourself as a coach and from the president and from the club is not just something that stays at the club, but it goes into their personal life and everything else they do outside of football as well. And like I know one of the things we spoke about early on was mentorship. I know the other day was talking about mentorship and one of the statements I said to you was that I feel like a lot of the players, especially in this league, need mentorship. How are you going to be able to help us in that space?
I think players who actively, there's different types of players. Players actively seek out mentorship who say, you know what, I need someone to guide me and help me because I might struggle on my own, right? Yeah. I might not be able to do it by myself. And there's other players who maybe think they can do it by themselves and don't often realize the benefit of mentorship. I was one of those players.
Yeah.
Don't tell me what to do. I know it already, right? Same when I started coaching.
Yeah.
When I started coaching, like you said, everyone thinks they can coach, right? Can't be that hard. I thought I was the best coach going around.
Yeah.
And each year, I'd grow. I'd do more development for myself. And I keep getting better and better and better. And I look back now on myself when I was younger, even to my 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I improve every week.
Yeah.
So mentorship is having the ability to seek out someone first. I think it's really important. The open mind to work with people on that. To find those lived experiences, and that's my job now, is to give my lived experiences, all the times I've failed, all the things I've been through, and give some context and aspect of how you could do things differently.
Let me put you in a scenario here. You've got a young player who really wants to play in the Premier League here, right for Port Darwin Unity. This young player has been struggling to break into the squad, and they come to you as a coach. They say, hey, Matthew, this is my goals. This is where I want to get to by the end of the year. How would you approach that?
I can talk from experience with this. So I'm not just giving you my perspective right now. I'm giving you what I've done before. Because that question, when you're a coach and you've been a coach for 20 years, that question is asked a lot.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's the worst player in the team who comes and says that, or it's the best player in the team who says, I want to get better.
Yeah.
That question is asked of you a lot. Not by everybody, though. But so firstly, the balls to ask that question, really good. Really impressive from anyone who comes and says that. I have this thing where I say, well, what does the perfect player look like? So you're a midfielder, right? You're a number 6. You're a defensive midfielder.
Yes.
Go and write me a list of everything that player does. What does the best number 6 do? And let's go through and say, well, what do you do? Where are we at? So we identify those gaps. So what are we comparing to? You want to be the best number 6 in the world? Find me the best number 6. Who is it? Makalele. You know, I'm a bit old school, right? I'm going back a bit of a generational thing, right? So, you know, you got to play like that. So what does he do well? Let's list it. There's all these things. Where do you struggle? You know what? He's great at this, but I struggle to, you know, defensively block lanes to the 9. Cool. Yeah. There you go. That's today's project. That's this week's project. In training, all your job is, as the number 6, is blocking the lane to the 9. How do you do that? It's not just about what to do. How do we do it? So what does it involve? But to get to that, you have to ask why. Why am I blocking the lane to the nine?
Yeah.
What's the point of that? We don't want the striker to get the ball to his feet. He's really good with his feet. He's going to bounce balls off. Cool. So you're the six. Now you know the why. We can't let him get the ball. He's going to bounce off to everybody else.
Yeah.
So now your job is to block that. How are you going to do that? Communicate with your centre back.
Yeah.
Always scanning. Yeah. Checking over your shoulder, looking, awareness, passing lanes, angles, all these little things.
Yeah.
So that approach, that mentorship, it's up to the player how detailed you want to be. You probably see now that the analytical side of things is really important to me.
Yeah.
It's not just a matter of, you know what, Johnny, just go and work harder than everyone else.
Yeah. Which is quite vague, which is what a lot of people are used to. They tell you, you got to work harder, man.
Yeah.
Where do you start?
What does work hard look like?
Yeah. Right? Where do you start?
There's only so many spots for players to get somewhere, whether that be playing, you know, first grade in Darwin, playing NPL first grade down south, playing for the national team, whatever it is. There's only so many spots. So find what you need to improve on to get to the level you want to be at.
And I guess transitioning from that, we'll talk about a little bit about your playing style. I know last time I spoke to you, I wouldn't say you had something against playing from the back, but it wasn't your cup of tea. Explain to me what's going on when it comes to playing from the back.
So risk and reward, mate. Risk and reward, right?
Talk to me.
We talked before about me being analytical, me understanding, you know, the probabilities and things like that are things I like in my life, right? Forget football.
Yeah.
I like to make decisions that are grounded on the data, the probabilities. Not being a data nerd, but being someone who takes the educated risk.
Yeah.
I can't see the risk and reward balancing for me with what I've seen so far in Darwin in trying to play out from the back. We might surprise some teams. I might be just foxing you a little bit, but I don't think we're going to play out from the back too much. Why risk in the back third? The other team can't score and the ball's the other end. Okay? Let's get there.
Yep.
And I'll ask you this question. I remember this, one of the first coaching courses I did, created a lot of debate. What's the best pass you can play in football? You're a footballer.
I know what people are expecting to answer that. They would say the pass forward, obviously.
Okay, well, but I want more detail than that. So
what's the best part? Personally, I'm an attacking player. I like to counter attack.
Yep.
Through balls to me is one of the best passes I can receive.
Cool. But where are we talking? So this is the stuff, right? And this is where, as a player, and when I met the playing group yesterday, there's going to be times where you're gonna be challenged, and this is one of those times. Yeah. Right?
Let's go through it.
Can I give you my answer?
Let me take a couple of guesses. Let me see if I'm close to it. So,
sure.
Obviously, I'm thinking that obviously one of the first thing, if we're going off that philosophy that don't muck around at the back,
yep.
we want to go forward.
Yep.
You want to get a diagonal ball, maybe a through ball, to your strikers or to your wingers to move the ball up, let them drive that ball all the way up to the top.
Yep.
So you can make something happen. How close is that from what you were thinking?
You're close, but I think the important part is the why. What's the objective? What are we trying to do?
We're trying to score.
Trying to score goals, yeah?
Yeah.
Because we're trying to win games, right? Try to win games. To win games, you got to score goals.
Correct. Cool.
So every time you get the ball, your first option should be the furthest forward pass. Why, if I can knock a ball to Stoy, why wouldn't I play that ball? Why would I just pass it sideways for the sake of passing sideways?
Well, there's a mindset, I believe, in Darwin football, which I hear a lot when people are playing on a park, which is always either they would say keep the ball, which means just rotate the ball.
Great generic term.
Yep. And or the statement would be don't give the $1 million ball. So they see okay, the striker is so far away. He's the furthest players out there. He could probably go and score, but why give the $1 million ball?
So I think there's a really important part of what I said that is the really part we're missing at the moment.
All right. Enlightenment.
It's the furthest forward pass. It's not to lump it long and hope the Stoy gets there. It's I can play Stoy. I see that ball. I see his movement. I can play it.
Yeah.
I'm going to play him. It's not just boot it long and hope for the next pass or the next pattern, the next stage of play.
Yeah.
Okay. The next phase. It's the first forward pass.
Mm.
There's a difference between a forward pass and a lump it long. Do you get me?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And that pass might not be Stoy, yeah? And sorry, Stoy, who's with us at the moment, he's probably thinking he's starting up front as number nine. It's,
bro, you know, might not be starting.
There's no guarantees here, bro. There's no guarantees
here. Man. Work.
So, for me, it could be the number 10. You could be playing that through ball in behind for your winger.
Yeah.
Furthest forward pass. Just the mentality.
Yeah.
We get that part right, we're good.
Yeah.
I want you to play forward, not backwards. Yeah. You don't make money passing backwards.
So when is the right time to recycle the ball?
The right time to recycle the ball is hard to describe in this moment because I need to see a scenario, right?
Great.
When you don't have that furthest forward pass, what's your next option? The next furthest forward. And you're sort of going through that process.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't have 5 minutes on the ball though, right? You're making these split-second decisions. Bang, can't play him. Cool. We rotate. No problems.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. What I'm not okay with is passing backwards, we can go forwards.
Yeah, so if there's three options forward and you still go backwards,
yeah,
why are you doing that?
Look, you'll know the answer soon because you come sit next to me, we'll have a chat. Because, yeah, be quick sub and you'll be...
Well, we need that because I think what I like about this conversation that we're having right now, it's not just you telling me what your philosophy is you're always rooting it in the word why, absolutely. Which is why I'm interested. Yeah. I'm interested to hear... Why you think, so let's say we're on the park, you're coaching me, I make a move, and I thought that was the best possible move. If you tell me you did that wrong, it's practically useless. But if you tell me why you think that wasn't the right move to make,
yep.
Then I can improve, right? Improvement can only come if the why is understood.
100%.
Right? There's got to be a reason behind.
Yeah. And you're spot on, and that's how I am.
Yeah.
It's important. And I hope that we won't get to the situation where you play these sort of passes in a game because we're going to work on this sort of stuff in training. Yeah. Our patterns of play, you know, when the ball goes in to the striker's feet, what are our next movements? Who's going where? What is our 10 doing? What are our wingers doing? Yeah. We've already worked on this, right? So it won't be a matter of decision-making. It'll be decision-making that's gone wrong. But if we work on this all week and consistently over the next few months, these things become second nature. So... And when I challenge you on the why, it's not me saying it's the wrong ball. It's me asking you, why did you play that ball?
Mm.
Right? So tell me what you see because you're going to see things differently. We're on different angles, right? You're out there. You're doing things. That's important too, giving the players that opportunity is to say why. I thought I saw that. I thought the movement was this. Cool, no problems. It's the live and learn stuff is really important too.
Yeah.
It's the constant, I guess, you know, disobeying of how we want to play as a team becomes an issue.
Yeah.
But creative exploration as a player, go for it. Mm-hmm. Go enjoy.
I guess I'm going to hit you with a quite tricky question. Many coaches that I know, not all, but many coaches don't give players the freedom to explain why they made the move they made. And if let's say we'll put you in a scenario, you came out and pulled up a player and said, hey, Stoy, so-and-so, Joel, this move you should have played this way. And he explains to you, he says, look, this is what I saw.
Yeah.
Are you okay with admitting your wrongs?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's got to be the right environment, though.
Okay?
And that's the same with me with a player as well.
Yeah.
I'm not going to put you on show in front of everybody.
Yeah. Right?
That's a real big, important thing for me. But I expect the same back. So we have those conversations.
Yeah.
We have them after the game. You know, we catch up for a drink. You send me a text. We can talk about it. Have a quick chat about it.
Yeah.
It's the environment stuff that's really important. We'll get that because the culture we're going to create is going to be a place where we can have those conversations in the positive way. We develop those relationships where we can have, you know, after the game's over, everything's cooled down. We can go through that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Because why do I care? Because I want us to be a better team.
Yeah.
And all the players are part of that. So if they want to know why, or they want me to challenge it, cool, we can have that conversation. But we can get the video back out as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's always ways to review things in different moments as well.
Correct. And I know like one of the things you mentioned last time we spoke, you said for you, because there's different types of players that speak different languages, speak from different background. But when I asked you and said, how do you deal with people from different background and how do you coach them? And one of the answers you said to me last time was that football is a universal language.
It is.
Enlighten me on that.
Doesn't matter where you are in the world.
Yeah.
football, it's its own language, right? You give someone a ball on a beach in Brazil, you give a kid at a local housing estate in the middle of London a ball, it speaks the same language, yeah, right? They know what's going on. We do have a, like Darwin's, it's such a diverse place, right? There's different people here. To explain things when maybe they don't speak English as a first language, the ball does the talking, the movement, the directions, the finger pointing, the head nods to where to go. That speaks a different language.
Yeah.
It's amazing how I think I've been there as a kid where you know, some random kid on holidays doesn't speak English and you start playing football and they want to join in. And, you know, I've been overseas and done that as a kid as well.
Yeah.
You just join the game. The ball, the game is the language.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It sounds really, you know, romantic. but football's a romantic game, right?
Yeah.
It's a game that passion, mate. You speak of passion. Passion's that's what it's about. That's romance. So football's passion. Football's religion for some people.
Ah, that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true. That's true.
Winning's my religion.
Winning's your religion.
Winning. We've got to win, bro.
You're really set on winning, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess you have no fun losing. Nobody celebrates a loss.
Do you remember what I said to the players last night?
Talk to us. What did you say?
I think we all love to win, right? You can get any team.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to win. There's no team you walk into and says, I don't care if we win today, boys. You know, just go and have fun. I don't think there's any team you walk into, any dressing room, where players just openly say that sort of stuff.
No, I heard one coach once said, he said, I should probably not repeat it, but he was praising. So, okay, let me just word it like this. How do you feel about people praising and say, oh, but we had a good game. We played a good game. We played good football. We lost, but we played good football. What's your take on that?
Did you lose?
Achalugo!
That's the reality, bro.
but we played a good game, though.
Yeah, congratulations. I'm happy for you, right?
But we lost.
You can play as good as you like. If you go home and you've lost and you go home happy, that's up to you. That's not me.
So you would be okay with some of the games being messy as
tackles and stuff. Oh, man, we could play the ugliest football, park that bus if we need to, and have one shot off target that's deflected and goes in and we win 1-0. Oh, mate, I'll be the happiest bloke you've seen for a long time.
I'm done.
It don't matter how we play, bro. It don't matter how we play.
Yeah.
The results are the most important. This is men's football. Yeah.
True.
So we're not talking about, you know, youth football. Different story, right?
Yeah.
How we play, development of players, you're growing the players, all that sort of stuff. But you try to go and tell an under 13 NPL team, under 14 NPL team in Victoria that, guys, doesn't matter today. Just as long as we play good, it's all good. They'll look at you like, what is this, bro? We're here to win. Everyone wants to win. That's why you play competitive sport.
Yeah.
If you don't want to win, don't play competitive sport. That's my take on it. We're here to win.
Well, there's going to be people watching this and be like, no, we're supposed to. The style of football is more important than the win.
Yeah.
But obviously, we're not with you. Let's get to the 3 points, and then we can talk about the style later.
I think that's a very fair comment.
Yeah.
But we want to play good football too. So, you know, don't just think we're going to lump it long and hope for the best. We're gonna play some good football.
Yeah,
we're gonna show some of these teams what we can do. But to do that, I need players that are going to be committed, working hard, and want to buy into that philosophy. Right?
Yeah,
that's a really important thing. I think I met some players last night who really want to do that. So we're going places.
Done. And I guess the best question to ask now is, what's your goal for the season? What is your goal?
I knew you were going to ask me that.
Yeah.
So can I reword it for you and give you a little, maybe a different angle on that? What if I said to you that, you know, Port Darwin, I don't think they've won a title since 2012 or 2014.
Yeah,
you'd have to correct me. But it's been a while. It's been a while, right?
Yeah.
What if I told you that my goal is simply for us to be the team that people at Port Darwin talk about in a few years' time? To say that team we had in 2026, wow, what a year that was. That's my goal. You can make that what you will.
That could go anyway. We lost so many games that people are like, what a team. But obviously, no, that I see what you're trying to say is that we left the legacy. Like people remember us for the things that we're able to do on the pitch.
Yeah.
Maybe we were the first team that beat a team from down south in the FA Cup. Maybe
there you go.
Maybe that something as big as that.
It could be. It could be. I don't know where it's going to go. But you start with the big goal, right?
Yeah.
My big goal is we leave a legacy.
Mm.
We'll work on those other goals too.
Yeah. But
the big goals, we leave a legacy. So, and we'll see in 12 months' time where that takes us.
So what's one thing? I know culture, you said, mentioned earlier, the culture is something super huge for you. What is one culture that you really want to bring into the club that you think is going to really change the way the players are?
For me, it's just effort.
Yeah.
And that's something I don't drive. Okay. So the level of effort you put in is up to you as a player. I can't do that. I can help that.
Yeah.
And how I help that is through the quality of a session, setting up the organization, the professionalism, all that sort of stuff. I'll do all that sort of stuff. No problems.
Yeah.
But the player determines your attitude in the day. The player determines how hard they're going to work. They know how much they've got left inside them. Okay. It's up to them how much they expend. But I will create the environment that helps them to expend that the best possible way. So effort, non-negotiable.
Wow. Your philosophy is quite, I like it. Yeah, I like your philosophy. And I can't wait to see what you're going to actually do on the park. And I know you've got tons of experience in coaching. And I remember when we spoke last time, you were talking about you did your license with some of the A-League coaches at the moment.
There's been a few A-League coaches who I've done my sort of coaching licenses with. So at the moment, Giancarlo Italiano, who's the head coach, chiefy of Wellington Phoenix.
Yeah.
He's actually up here in Darwin early this year for the playoffs, the FFA Cup playoffs. Yeah. We caught up for brekkie. I took him for a drive, showed him Port Darwin's ground, actually, that sort of area, just showing what the facilities look like.
Yeah.
Showed him Mindle's ground as well.
Yeah.
So he's one. He's doing fantastic. We had Robbie Stanton, who coached Newcastle Jets. Craig Foster was on my course as well.
Yeah, right.
So Michael Bridges, former Sunderland Leeds United player.
Yeah.
He was on my course.
Yeah.
There were plenty more. I just can't remember them all.
So you're quite well known around Melbourne then.
I mean, I think I know a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's why the last week's been really exciting for me up here, because since that announcement was made that I'm coaching Port Darwin, I haven't been involved. You know, no one's texted me. It's like if that happened in Melbourne, I'd speak to 100 people about, hey, I'm going to this club, and they'd ring me up. So I've heard you're going there. And even before the ink's dry on the pen, on the paper, it's like, oh, I heard you sign there. It's crazy. Like, what's going on? I'm really lucky, and I know it won't last long, that I'm shielded from all of the
once this episode comes out,
the football politics. And don't know too many people. So I'm looking forward to being part of the Darwin football community a bit more. Yeah. There's a few people I talk to that I, you know, have built relationships with.
Yeah.
But there'd be plenty more as well. So
I guess it's only fair that I ask you a question that many have been thinking, especially when someone comes from down south and comes up here to Darwin. They always look at our league and say, hey, can someone answer this question? Where does Darwin stand today compared to the league down south? Where do we compare?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. The FFA Cup results over the last few years haven't been great.
Right?
So, you know, that's not good.
Yeah.
That's not good. But the reality is that the talent pool's smaller.
Yeah. Yeah?
So we've got to be realistic. I look at Palmerston, right? Some of our players live in Palmerston. You live in Palmerston.
Yeah.
Palmerston's got 40,000 people. It's a whole council area, right?
Yeah.
The last suburb that I lived in, or next door to, has 64,000 people in Melbourne, a suburb. And we're talking about that is less here in a whole council area. There's 120,000 people between Darwin and Palmerston.
Yeah.
The talent pool's small. So we can say, yeah, we're not good enough, they're better than us. But the reality is the talent pool's not quite there. And that's where we get let down, is we don't have the competition. The players, week in, week out, isn't that strong because we're diluted with the numbers we have. We think bringing another team in the Premier League this year, a team came in last year. The more we dilute it, the harder it becomes. And that's, I guess, a bit of a challenge at the moment. So,
yeah.
But you can't have a four-team league either, right? Because a four-team league comes pretty boring. It's the same people every week. So where do we lack? I think we play on one of the biggest pitches up here.
I've been saying this for years, man.
We drag the standard down a little bit by everyone's buggered, mate. We play in a super hot, sweaty climate. It's a tropical climate on the world's biggest pitch. people are going to get tired, right? And then when you're tired, what happens? You make more mistakes, the game slows down, all that sort of stuff. So
the quality goes down, yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we make the pitch smaller. We bring it a little bit and we try and increase the endurance artificially by making the pitch a bit smaller to help that standard sort of stay at the highest possible part. Just an idea. So
I'm with you on this idea. I've been saying this idea for too long, man.
Yeah.
The pitch is too big, man.
It's massive.
Even the guys down south, when they're coming for FA Cup, they're complaining about how big the pitch is.
Yeah.
And I think it's not so good for the league, just generally speaking, because they train with the right size of pitch down there. So the players get used to the space. They know when to turn, when not to turn, how much space, how much time they've got on the ball. And we play with a humongous pitch. So then you think you got tons of time. And then when FA Cup comes and we finally standardize the pitch and take it back to the normal size, suddenly people realize they don't have time. And you got to release the ball quicker. You got to sprint much faster. You got to, and I think it's doing us a disadvantage.
Oh, I agree. And how many clubs train on pitches the size that you play on a Friday night or a Saturday?
Maybe Mindo. They use the whole entire space, but maybe not.
I don't think they do.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think anyone does. We train on these small pitches up here, right? They're narrow.
Yeah.
Port Darwin's pitch. Yeah. It's very narrow. The training ground.
Correct.
You go to play at Morara. It's massive. Mm. So how do you adjust for that as a player? It's an interesting one, right? But we'll get there.
So what's your plan for Port Darwin? If you know that's one of our challenges that we got to face, that the home ground and the pitch that we play on is not the same.
It's a big challenge. Maybe I'm looking at it to that analytical lens of like everything we're doing, the dimensions aren't going to be right.
Yeah.
But it ain't just a challenge for us, it's a challenge for everyone.
Yeah.
So can I flip the question and say, you know, the teams we play against are going to experience the same problems. How do we exploit that? Let's do it that way. Let's forget about us for a second.
Yeah.
We know that Mindel are going to have the same thing. Olympic have the same problem. So how do we exploit that? How do we play in a way that's going to help us exploit that, I guess, spatial awareness of players.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. I guess we're getting to the end of this podcast, and I really appreciate you coming in here and speaking and sharing so much of your views and how you see different things. It's only fair that when we're including you, I'm part of the Port Darwin family, and a lot of people watching at home that are watching that are going to watch this episode, they're going to wonder one thing. What message does this man have for the Port Darwin community?
Well, I think I've made it pretty clear that, you know, I'm here to win, right?
Yeah.
But winning can take time. This is a conversation I've had with the club and the board around, you know, what does winning look like? Our pre-seasons here are short. Well, in my opinion, they're short as a coach. As a player, you're like, bro, they're too long. But I can hear stories. He doesn't turn up until the last week of February. So, but give it time. We'll be on the right trajectory. It might take a little bit of time to get there.
Yeah.
But we'll get there. But we need everyone to support us. And it's going to be, I want to leave that legacy, right?
Yeah.
For this club. I heard there's a guy, last year's coach, Scotty. He's a tattoo, a Port Darwin tattoo.
The man's got Port Darwin in his veins.
That's crazy. So, you know, we're going to leave a legacy.
Yeah.
I ain't going to get a Port Darwin tattoo. but, you know, maybe we can add a little star to Scotty's tattoo. Like the teams who win the Premier League do, put a little star there. So maybe we can do that.
Yeah. And I guess what should the supporters expect from you? Because they're going to be showing up there. The new coach, the first game, expect the pitch to be packed with supporters, all ready to cheer us on. waiting to see what the coach is going to bring forward and the type of players he's going to select and how we're going to play football.
Going to bring some energetic players. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of energy out there. That first game as well, that first whistle. I'm excited already. Energy.
Yeah.
One, organization.
Yeah.
Two, and a winning culture. Three.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we'll bring.
Wow. Let me end with this last question. Suppose you do coach this year and we succeed and you coach many years from now. At the end of your coaching career with Port Darwin, how do you want to be remembered? And what do you want to be remembered for?
Can I say winning again?
You can say whatever you want to say.
Yeah, winning.
When they think of Matt, what should they think?
Look, I'm not worried what people think. It doesn't bother me, to be honest, whether it's positive or negative. It doesn't faze me.
Yeah.
And I've learned this through coaching. The trophies don't mean anything in terms of the physical trophy.
Yeah.
It's the memories you make when you're there. So for me, how people remember me is up to them. But I want to walk away knowing that I had fun and fun is winning. So I want to walk away remembering those times, singing the song with the lads after the game. Those sort of feelings are what is really, really important to me. So that word legacy, you know, if we win, we create our own legacy like that. We want to win this club a trophy and I won't settle for anything else.
Beautiful. You mentioned the sing the songs. Have they taught you to put down songs already?
No.
Have you been taught the song?
I haven't heard the song. I haven't heard the song. So
there you go. That's Maka, teach him the song, please. Jules, teach him the song.
But I don't want to know the song. I don't know the song until day one.
Until we win. We gotta win.
Until day one.
We gotta win the first game to sing the song.
Yeah. My day one is round one. Okay?
Your day one is round one.
That's day one.
All right. So beautiful.
Mark day one your diary.
Yeah.
Today things change.
Done. A lot of people watching this episode, a lot of coaches watching the episode, they're like, okay, we can't wait for Matthew to come through to the league and see what he brings out to the plates and how he helps the league elevate and we're looking forward towards that. And so are the players, and there's so many other talents that might be considering Port Darwin this year. Those talents that want to commit to the club and that want to work with you and that are watching this episode right now, what would you say to them?
I think something I said when I was first appointed to the club, it was along the lines of, you know, if you want to be a good footballer and you want to go to your next level, then think about, as I said earlier, what does your next level look like? Do you want to play in Melbourne? Do you want to play in Brisbane? Do you want to try and play overseas? You know, how old are you? What does your career look like? Are you happy to play here in Darwin? It's be the best you can be. And if you want to strive to be the better player who can grow and grow and grow, then we want those sort of players at the club. But you've got to have all those things I talked about, the effort, the accountability, the drive. We've had some interest already. There's been players who've somehow I've had these players add me on Facebook. I don't even know who they are, but apparently they're the good players. And it's been good so far. But, yeah, I'd love to bring players in.
Yeah.
But I want to give everybody at the club a fair opportunity as well.
Yeah.
Because the club did really well last year. And I say we because you might not know this, but I was in the committee last year as well.
So
it was important to get my foot in just slowly to see what the club was like. The club did well last year. We've got a good team. We've got a good core. So anything comes in now has to add to that.
Yeah. It's just to add another layer of strength to the team.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing your story, sharing your philosophy, sharing your mindset in football. I actually enjoyed this so much. I appreciate you coming in. Any other words you want to add in?
I think this idea of doing a podcast with football people is fantastic. And Port Darwin to be joining forces is great because we're sharing people, we're sharing real stories, raw stories.
Yeah.
And I think the club's going to grow. So I hope you do some more features in the club throughout the year, because I think there's some good content that comes up.
Dan, the Discover Your Podcast Partner Report, Darwin. If you're interested in watching this episode will be out in collaboration with Paul Darwin. You'll be out on the Discover Your Podcast, YouTube, Instagram, Spotify. Yeah, if you already follow Paul Darwin, stay tuned, and the episode will be out. They'll share it on their page as well. And if you're not following Paul Darwin right now, please give it a follow. If you're not following the Discover You podcast, go ahead and search it up. Discover You podcast on all social media. You'll find us. Thank you so much. Thank you, Matt. Thank you for being here. Paul Darwin, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed our content, please follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and TikTok. And if you really want to support us, please support us on Patreon, Subscribestar, and Crypto. I personally want to say thank you to all of you that are following us. And I want to make a promise that if you follow us, if you subscribe to our channel, that we will keep producing the best, highest form of quality content to add value to your life and help you find fulfillment in life. Thank you.